Okay, welcome to another edition of Back in the Office. Chris Carman, I'm going to be your host, along with my co-host, Nick Carman.
Hello.
And today we've got a fun story. We've got a gentleman going to join us, Steve Poliska from Kula Logistics. And gosh, Steve, we met, I think, what was it, about 6-8 months ago when I leased some office space to you. Like, I know most of the people in the world from leasing office space. If they don't lease office space, I don't know. So you leased some office space from us, and I thought it was a cool story because you had relocated from Southern California, and so there's some things to talk about. We just recently had a guest on, Troy Medley from Lambda Chi Fraternity, the headquarters of this international fraternity, and he too had moved from Southern California, Orange County. And it's always fun to get the impressions of people when they have gone from one place and they've come here to Central Indiana. And was that a big change for you?
Yeah, it was a change. I think we leased the office November 2021, and I also came from Orange County, California. Back in 2019, my wife and I, April 2019, my wife and I knew we were going to start this business. And the initial thought was to start in Southern California. And as we started to forecast the rest of our lives, to our family planning goals, business planning goals, it kind of hit us that if we continued down the track we were on and we started this business in Southern California, we would have a great life. We would enjoy our lives. We were about to buy a house. And but then we started thinking about our family and kids and what was going to happen to our kids. So we could push them into private school and we could get them into colleges. And then what would they do from there? So like myself, I was born and raised in Southern California. Affordability was not great as I came out of school. So I knew when picking a college, I wanted to get out of California. I wanted to get my start somewhere else where it was more affordable and I might be able to have a more firm foundation to launch off of. So I chose Purdue University. I happened to meet my wife there. And
Was she from Central Indiana?
She's from Batesville, Indiana.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Casket capital of the world.
And they have a little ski hill.
Perfect north. Yeah, little different than
they have a ski hill, but not a lot of snow though to go with that.
It's a huge perk coming from California. Yeah, ski hill now. Yeah,
I actually haven't done any skiing there yet, but it's on the list. It's just tough. We used to live in Denver.
That's about it.
Well, you have little kids.
Yeah,
you'll be taking them there.
Yep. So I went to Purdue. I ended up taking a job right out of school in Cincinnati, Ohio. It allowed me to build some wealth, buy some real estate, buy our first house very early on, whereas most of the people I had graduated high school with were still living with parents, you know, paying $3,000 a month for apartments. And so as I left corporate America, I moved back to California when I was in a better place in my life. And I lived there for about 2 years, moved back near my family, right next door to my brother. And we had made the decision we were going to build our life out there. About 2 years into it, that's kind of when we had this epiphany. It's time to launch this new business. We're going to do it here in Southern California. But what is going to happen to our lives from there? And I told my wife, I said, you can pick any place in the world you want to move to. And I threw some stuff out there, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina, Nashville, Tennessee, San Antonio, Texas, just some of these places where a lot of people from California are relocating to. And with her being from Batesville, she obviously said, I picked Batesville, Indiana. I said, well, you know, that's great. But one of our things that I was focused on was the ability to hire talent and attract talent to our company. So Batesville, Indiana is a great city. It's not really a destination for people who are graduating from Purdue or IU. They want to go to Indianapolis. They want to go to Chicago. They want to go to Nashville. So we identified Indianapolis. And then just from the from the national attention that the city gets, from just the national attention, it made it very clear Carmel was where we wanted to be. We did hear of Fishers as well. But I think I came out here over Thanksgiving. I drove around. We rented a small little office space, one-room building, and then we started to launch our platform out of that room. Mm. From there, now, you know, we have 20 employees, and I was just on a recruiting call today trying to bring in a new employee, and, you know, he asked us about our benefits, and, you know, one thing I said to him, and I believe this to be very true, you know, not only our benefits packages do we have health insurance, 401k, dental, vision, but I said, you get to live and work in Carmel. I was like, you don't have to work in Carmel, or you don't have to live in Carmel, but working in Carmel, you don't understand the benefits that brings.
Yeah, you know, it's and you may not be able to appreciate this. Gosh, when you were in school, if you had said to people, hey, we should move to Carmel, Indiana. Most young people coming out of school are thinking, you're nuts. I'm not, that's like suburban living out in the suburbs. They want to live in like Broad Ripple or downtown.
Sure.
But really in the last handful of years, there's been such a big change because of the redevelopment of the city. It's kind of a cool place to be now with the Monon and the restaurants, the bars, and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. It's kind of attracting a much wider audience, I think.
It's got a lot more amenities than it used to.
Oh, yeah,
that's
no
basically
doubt.
What it is. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the walkability, bikeability, you know, today we had one guy ride his electric skateboard into work. We had another guy take his bike. Lunch, we try and split up lunch where somebody will go on a walk or do something. You can walk out of our building within 5 to 7 minutes, you're on the Monon. So then you can go north towards Midtown, Sun King, Main Street, all the restaurants. You can go south for a walk towards the Monon Park where the lakes are and the ducks are, all that stuff. It is a huge selling feature.
Yeah, it really is. And a decade ago, if you told somebody from somewhere else, yeah, we live in Carmel, Indiana, they'd say, well, where is that? Yet today, because of all of the all the notoriety as one of the best small cities in the world or whatever, it really has become very popular.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't have to ask you, so what do you do on weekends? Coming from Southern California where you've got tremendous recreation,
the beach.
here in Central Indiana, hopefully it's not detasseling corn or something on the weekends.
No, we do take part in some of the more Midwestern stuff. So my wife grew up on a farm in Batesville, Indiana. So I think
there you go. That detasseling corn isn't too far. Yeah, she's probably done that.
I have. She has. My father-in-law, he gets me involved in some of that Midwest stuff, the fishing, the deer hunting, the all that. And for me, I love it. Being a business owner and appreciating challenges, trying new things, pushing through them. You know, my father-in-law invited me to his ranch to go deer hunting. You know, I'm on YouTube for 3 straight months trying to figure out what I'm going to do here if I actually shoot one.
At a deer hunt?
Yeah. And sure enough, you know, we got one, and I was out there all alone, and I didn't know what to do. But I got through it, and, you know, now we like to cook and hunt and fish and do all that stuff. So it's,
you survived the deer hunt.
I did. And it, you know, I love to hunt and fish and do all that stuff, but it's more the one-time task, teaching myself I can do it and get through it. And then once I do it, it kind of wears off. Honestly, we stay pretty local too. We have a 7-year-old, 2 5-year-olds, and a 2-year-old. So we have soccer and church, and it's just we just stay local. I joke, I haven't left the 3-mile radius of 106th Street to 146 in the 3 years we've lived here, because there's no reason to. Yeah.
Except when you go deer hunting.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're not doing that within that area.
No, we'll go out.
The cops will show up, and there are plenty of police in Carmel.
Yeah. We'll go out to like Laurel, Indiana, Batesville, Indiana.
Yeah.
There's like dirt bike tracks out there and off-roading stuff. And
yeah, there really is a lot to do if you're resourceful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else do we do out here? That's it. You know, we have great neighborhood. So we live in a neighborhood called Williamson Run, which is 106th and Keystone. And very different than when we lived in California. You know, we didn't know our neighbors in California. I can remember the first time I invited my wife to come visit us at my parents' home in Tustin, California. We pull out on the street in the rental car, and our neighbors are out walking on the street, and my wife starts waving to my neighbors. And I reach across the car, and I put her hand down, and I say, "Hey, what are you doing?" She goes, "Oh, I was waving to your neighbor." "Oh, no, no, no.
That was a gang signal."
we don't do that here. She's like, "You don't know who that is? They live three doors down." I go, "No, we just, people don't do that out here."
Everybody's commuting. Everybody's doing their thing, right?
I think everybody is just so focused on their own thing. The sense of community is just different where I'm from. My brother, same thing. He's 30 years old. He owns his own business. He does not know any of his neighbors. There's no sense of community. Whereas, you know, we moved into this neighborhood, and the first day, I mean, the food that was dropped on the doorstep and just the knock on the door, the exchange of the phone numbers, that doesn't happen in Southern California, the sense of community. You know, now we know all our neighbors very well, and they all exchange phone numbers, and if there's a problem, we kind of have each other's back, and that's something we've never had before. So I'm still very actively recruiting my brother to bring his business out here to Carmel, Indiana. He owns a mortgage bank.
Which would do very well here as well.
Yeah, it's the, well, you know,
it's a great housing market.
Carmel's one of those communities, and this is kind of why I've pushed him. We were just talking about this all weekend. He's in the Southern California market. Average home price, 700 to 2 million. Okay, which is great. Every loan you do is a home run. But with the rising interest rates and the market so competitive, affordability is even more so gone. At 6%, a $1 million home, it prices everybody out.
Right.
So I you know, what I kind of told him with his business, go secure a solid foundation, which would be in the Midwest, some of these markets that are protected, like Carmel. You know, housing here it's gone up tremendously over the last 3 years. It's still very competitive, though. And then our ability to earn here in the Midwest is not lower than the ability to earn in California. Right. We still have very high earners here in Carmel, you know? What I'm trying to talk him into is, you know, get the benefits of the Midwest. And then you'll have that secure base to grow your business off of. Well, you weather this interest rate sort of margin compression in the mortgage real estate.
Well, I was hearing some statistics recently that a lot of migration is occurring from the coast, which had traditionally been the hottest areas for business, for housing, everything. You know, you kind of look at the map of the U.S., and it's like a smiley face. You've got a smile along the coast, and then you've got Chicago and maybe Cleveland or something for the eyes. Those were the markets to be. And yet it's kind of changing now where people are moving to the heartland, if you will, because they're looking for a better life or a higher quality of life. So I think there's a lot to be said for that. It's kind of interesting. I remember when we met, you looked at the office space that you ultimately leased. And it was a sublease. So the guy who was the primary on that lease, the main lease, after you left, he goes, "Oh, he's kind of young, you know, he kind of looks like maybe he played with Jane's Addiction or something."
Yeah.
And I said, "You know, it's a logistics business. And I'll tell you, it is the hottest thing in the world right now. This is the new business, especially here in central Indiana, where logistics is so big. It's so hot." I said, "We're going to see more and more business people like Steve moving to this community, rather than the old traditional insurance business, banking business. We're going to start to see, we're going to look like the major cities, and where you have much greater diversity, and especially in an area like logistics, it's just going to be so hot. Everybody's coming here." Yep. So tell us about that a bit.
Yeah, how'd you get started in logistics?
So I came right out of school. I worked for a mega-type logistics company, large company, and learn the business from them. You know, for us, what we're doing here in Carmel, when we set out to start our business, we set out four core principles for our business: faith, family, fitness, and freight. Okay. And then we have sort of a mantra that we want to be a small group of people with a monster impact on that small group of people's lives, and then a monster impact on the city we're in, which is Carmel. So right now, since we signed the lease in November of 2021, I'd say our company was about 9 people. We were moving into a space that has room for about 36 people. We came out of a space that probably had room for 5. And we've hired 5 or 6 new people to join us and just rapidly growing. The industry right now is chaotic. So what we do is we are the middleman between people who ship things, manufacturers, and truck drivers. So we help some of these companies who need their products shipped source truck drivers. So perfect example, if you look at the produce market, that's the easiest way to look at it. A company like Driscoll Fruit, number one berry producer in the world, they will have 35 loads of strawberries that need to go out of Northern California on a Saturday, and there will be 15 trucks. Now, have you ever had a load of strawberries in your fridge before? How long do they last?
Not very long.
A couple days.
Yeah.
So 25 loads got to go on Saturday. If they don't pick, they're going to be sitting there till Monday. Your couple of days is costing you a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we go get out on the open market, and we are consultants, communicators, logistic coordinators to a company like Driscoll, and tell them, hey, I know you think this is going to cost $7,000 to move this from Indianapolis today, but there's a lot of people trying to do the same thing. For us to make this happen, it's going to cost $77, $78, $79, $8,000. And we're communicating back and forth with our customers to ensure they get the capacity. So our job's 24/7. You know, we may get the call in the middle of the night. You know, Costco's out of chicken. You know, who are they going to call?
So Costco's out of chicken. They call you?
They do.
Okay, interesting.
They do, yeah. So we can go pick up at a poultry plant, and we'll bring full truckloads to all the different DCs. And
absolutely. Do they set you up with the suppliers? They don't tell you where it's coming from, or do you guys actually have your connections then?
Yeah, it's all. So we don't buy the chicken.
Right.
So they will have a supplier. So whoever it is, whether you're a meat broker in California or Ohio or wherever, they know where the product is. They'll have it. They'll put a bid on that product as well.
Got it.
And then they'll call us though and say, hey, I can only get this order if we have a truck in there with 12 hours.
They don't have a way to get it to themselves.
Correct. If we don't have if we don't have a truck there within 12 hours, they're going to find a reason to sell it to someone else.
That has got to be a challenge right now because, you know, I'm a person, I spend a lot of time driving to different markets where our clients are located. And all the trucks we're hiring. You know, so is it tough to find those drivers? Are you finding drivers or trucking companies or all of the above?
Yeah, so the average age of a truck driver is, you know, up in the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. So it's a retiring generation. So there is a shortage of trucks. The last 3 years, if you owned a truck or you owned a trucking company, it has been very profitable. Okay, so there's been a lot of equipment coming out. If you wanted to buy a trailer right now or a truck, it's non-existent. You could buy used. But it's been very profitable. So as much supply of trucks that's available is out there right now because it's profitable. What's going to happen over time? Fuel prices are going up. It will become less profitable. Less of these companies will put trucks out on the road. We'll have some sort of shift. One interesting thing in logistics right now. So although a lot of people think that fuel prices going up, it's going to raise freight rates. It's actually doing the opposite. So what's happening right now with the energy spend the average consumer in America has, gasoline. So me and my family, if we're used to spending $800 a month in gas, we are now spending $12 to $15. Mm-hmm. So we're no longer going out to dinner. We're no longer buying that patio set for the backyard. we're no longer spending that extra stuff on those items. So all those shipments that were once moving on trucks are no longer moving. So that creates less shipments available, which drives the prices down, even though fuel prices are going up. So there are actually less shipments moving right now because the average household in America is buying less stuff.
They've shifted demand.
Correct. Just to the essentials.
To the essentials, energy.
Grocery,
food. And away from the discretionary spending.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So is this connecting then to the supply chain? Because we're all hearing today about the supply chain. We know this. If you want to buy a piece of furniture, it's going to take 6 months before you get that piece of furniture. It used to be 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is another clog coming down the pipeline right now. So China right now is having another coronavirus issue where they have shut down factories. They have shut down the ports.
They've shut down cities.
Shut down cities.
Yeah.
There is a backlog there that hasn't hit here yet. We've cleared out most of that backlog in the ports.
Mm-hmm.
I think trucking got a lot of the blame on why this stuff couldn't leave the ports. But for every container that hit the ground, there was a truck there waiting to take it. The bigger problem was they couldn't get them off quick enough. It didn't matter. They were running 24/7 operations with trucks running 24/7. There was just too many containers coming in to do anything.
Hmm. So basically the demand for that product had gone up. So more containers were coming, and we didn't have the facilities, the ports, it's basically
the port
to take
capacity,
them on.
Really.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, with all the PPP money that went through and stimulus money for COVID, a lot of households were spending more on home improvement type stuff, patio furniture, all that kind of stuff. So they were out there spending money on goods that were moving trucks, which, only caused more of a clog. But now with the cost of fuel going up, with the cost of everyday goods going up, inflation, people have stopped buying that stuff. There's going to be less shipments moving. It'll be interesting to see what this clog in China does as it hits the ports again.
So you're saying we ought to go out and buy toilet paper. As much of it as possible.
Clear out the shelves.
Yeah.
That and paper towels.
Yeah.
So what's it look like in 10 years for you?
10 years. We're going to, we want to stay on the track we're on. We do not have any ambition to be the largest logistics company in Indiana. We're going very slow and concentrated on who we're bringing in. We want to be a small group of people with a monster impact on those people's lives. So one thing I joke about, but I'm pretty serious, when we're looking down the pipe, 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, when, it's time for me to meet my maker and we're holding my funeral, I want as many people fighting for front row seats as possible. And what I mean by that, being a business owner, making unselfish decisions, putting your people first. When you hire somebody, understanding the responsibility that brings, things aren't always going to be great. Are you ready for the rainy day? Or are you going to have to sit down and have a conversation with your people that, you're laying off 10 people today or you're cutting pay or whatnot? My wife and I, we take it very serious being the owners of this company. And so we just want to grow steady, have a monster impact on our employees' lives, bring in good people. And keep going. I think headcount wise, what does that look like in 10 years? I think we'll probably have somewhere around 100 employees. We want to continue to stay involved in our community. I can't tell you enough, the benefit piece of being in Carmel and bringing our business here. Like I said, I was on a recruiting call today, and the benefits piece of our call when we were talking about bringing somebody in was based around the city we live in. And it wasn't what kind of healthcare do you have or dental. That's all standard. Any logistics company is going to offer that. What makes us different?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It was probably 10 years ago. I looked at statistics and numbers for, at that time, software developers were really tough to hire, and they probably still are, basically. But we looked at a software developer with a handful of years of experience living in Chicago. They were making something like $95,000 per year. In Indianapolis, they were making something like $72,000. And yet, that $72,000 had more buying power than the $95,000 did in Chicago. So they were using that as a big recruiting tool. And it probably stands today, coming from most major markets, especially the coastal markets.
Right.
Yeah, the housing market here, coming from California to here, and, you know, we just recently purchased a house, and the value was unbelievable. I mean, we have four kids. We found a six-bedroom house, five bedrooms upstairs, a bedroom in the basement. I think it's 6,000 square foot. For $575,000. It just, it doesn't exist in Chicago anymore. It doesn't exist in Denver. It doesn't exist in California. It's a very unique opportunity here in Carmel still.
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising because the growth in central Indiana in general, but Carmel, these north suburbs, Fishers are good examples. The growth has been so strong. It's kind of surprising. The housing cost is actually not inflated too much. Mm-hmm. I know it quite a bit. I look at the property. I've lived in the home that we have for, gosh, 25 years. And it has, the price has gone up quite a bit. The value has gone up quite a bit on the house. But still, relatively speaking, I mean, just no comparison.
Yeah, it's just not as volatile as it is on the coast large cities.
There's a crunch in California. And so our family is a perfect example of it in California. My dad bought his first house, for $180,000. That house is now worth $1.2 million, okay? It's a four-bedroom ranch in a great family community. Now, if my dad was to sell his house for $1.2 million, let's say he has a 3,500-square-foot house. If he was to sell his house, he would now have to go buy a house for $800,000 somewhere. That would be a smaller house. That would not be as nice of a house. And then he would have to pay the property taxes on $800,000. Right. So these homes that families typically move into to raise their families – you know, like myself, I have four kids. We needed some space. Aren't flipping over in California. Here, we bought the house from another business owner who raised four kids in it. And now him and his wife are going to go buy a ranch somewhere here local at around relative the same price. Obviously, the value went up, but they are putting those houses back on the market for families to move into. We'll use the house for our space. But, you know, when it's just me and my wife 20 years from now, we don't need the 6,000 square foot.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll give it back to some other family to raise their families.
Right.
So that cycle is still going on here in the Midwest. That cycle has completely stopped in California.
That's a good point. It just stays in the family forever.
Yeah. And then what will happen is you'll get parents that will give a home to their kids to raise their kids in. But it doesn't go on the market the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the million-dollar question. So is this – last summer was your first summer in Indianapolis or
– So we actually moved to Indianapolis in 2019. We moved to Carmel. That's okay. When we started the business.
So you've been to a 500 already.
I have not.
Oh, man, you
I went to
go.
Purdue. I went to Purdue. I never went to a 500.
Truth be known, so I moved here from Chicago in late 85, and it was probably 10 years before I actually went to a race. Yeah, and I was thinking, this is not that cool. It was something else. Yeah. So you got to do it.
I will go. One thing that we have done, and we've done it a couple times now that lives up to its name, we have been to St. Elmo's.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We've gone a couple times now.
The shrimp cocktail.
The shrimp cocktail lives up to its
go
name.
Go there when you're having sinus issues. Yeah. You'll clear them.
The shrimp cocktail lives up to its name. The steak lives up to its name. The atmosphere. This isn't a plug for St. Elmo's, but when you find a good restaurant, you never know what you're going to get. And that's one that held up to its
end. Oh, yeah, game. Especially in that front bar, that traditional bar.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
So
yeah.
That's one indie tradition thing we've done. Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Love hearing your story. As I mentioned, when we met, I thought this is really a cool story. So I'm glad we've had an opportunity that we can share it with some other people. And best of luck with this business.
Thank you.
Sounds like you guys are killing it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Keep killing it.
You have to come visit one day.
Take some more space.
Grow that office.
We will. Come knock on the door, see what we're doing, meet the people. Maybe you'll have something in common. And we have a great group of people. So feel free to knock on the door anytime.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, guys.